you're out here with you're married with kids, as you mentioned. Your wife Lisa, she's a climber.
Yeah, she's a climber. You know, we kind of did the thing where we got married. You know, I've been married 18 years and didn't have kids until you're, you know, 13 years into it. So we did a lot of traveling as a couple and did a lot of climbing. You know, I've been, you know, as a climber, East Coast climber, traveling west every summer since the late 70s.
Well, this takes us into our first topic. This is traveling from the East Coast, which you do a lot of. How many trips have you made out west? What do you consider west? West of
well,
Colorado?
For me, there's like two different types of trips. There's the weekend trip, which is the Northeast, you know, the New River Gorge, my home area.
Yeah.
The Schwangunks, where I learned to climb and still love to visit. Great area. And like North Conway, you know, Cathedral and Cannon and those areas and some of the sport climbing up there. That's a pretty long drive for me as well. Beyond a 6 or 8 hour drive, you know, it's no longer a weekend trip, so I might as well just get on an airplane. And therefore, 3 or 4 times a year, I'm fortunate to be able to, my job allows me to get out and do some traveling and get west, or on a few occasions, get to Europe. And that's really what keeps me training and keeps me motivated and really passionate, is to visit those new areas. And I've been to pretty much every major area across the country. Of course, I've been climbing 30 years, so I should have been to most of them. But, you know, Bend is up there, you know, Smith Rock. I've been, you know, here a number of times since the late 80s. And I have some other favorite areas, Wild Iris in Wyoming.
I love that area.
Yeah, I love the climbing around Vegas. I want to visit there a lot more, maybe retire there, who knows. And, you know, the Front Range of Colorado is sweet. That's where I started climbing as a teenager, at least traveling as a climber, out to El Dorado in the late 70s and early 80s, you know, in the days way before sport climbing. And
you followed the mass, the small mass of climbers back then, didn't you? To like everybody was, this is the popular area and these were the hard routes that are, go there. And did you do that? It was like a following, basically. It was almost like a dead show.
Yeah, that's natural. You know, a lot of people don't know this about me because they know Eric Hurst, you know, the current climber who's done a lot of sport climbing, put up a few hundred sport routes like at the New River Gorge. And but I, you know, the first 10 or 12 years I climbed, I never clipped a bolt. You know, I was a trad climber and I still enjoy trad a lot. You know, growing up the Gunks, you know, that was really my forte. So going to a place like El Dorado in the late 70s or early 80s, I loved it. That was just awesome, you know, as a teenage climber, which there weren't very many of. You know, I mean, I remember seeing Christian Griffith out there around 1981. You know, he was one of the few teenage climbers in Colorado, and there's just a few of us in the Northeast. Of course, now teenage climbers are ubiquitous, but back in that era, you know, the trad era, they really were not. You know, we were oddballs. So we wanted to go to the famous areas. You know, back then it was El Dorado. We're going to Yosemite. Yeah, or going to Joshua Tree, and certainly in the Northeast, it was the Gunks and Seneca Rocks and Cannon Cliff and Cathedral Ledge. Those were the areas that as a young climber, I went to and wanted to try to send the hardest routes I could. You know, back in that era, it was 5.11 or 5.12 minus. You know, that was kind of what you were looking at in the late 70s, early 80s. You know, I think I did my first 12 in 5.12 in 1981 or something like that. So long time ago.
And it was gear.
And it was gear. Sketchy gear. You know? And
good for you.
Stuff that I probably am wise enough to not get on now.
Better you than me.
But, you know, but that, of course, gave me the technical skills and allowed me to then apply those skills. And, you know, on along 1985, 1986, I kind of discovered this area, New River Gorge, you know, and that was an area that was very late in discovery in East Coast climbing, you know, and that it really didn't take off until the 80s. You know, the Gunks was developed in the 40s and 50s and 60s, and the New River Gorge, some of the best climbing in the country, arguably in the world, and I was really excited to arrive there in a time that it was just being developed, and only a handful of other climbers there developing it, because it was kind of away from the big cities and not well known. And my first trip there in 1986, I freed an aid route at 512A. My first route there was freeing an aid route at 12A, and kind of bagged a first ascent my first day. And it's like, wow, you know, what kind of potential this place has. And I was lucky to be one of a handful of climbers, a lot of other excellent climbers that, you know, put up routes at the New in the 10 years that followed. And now it's you know, one of the most developed climbing areas in the country. And if it weren't for the damn rain, the constant rain, it would be, I think it was Lynn Hill that said, you know, in one of her early visits that, you know, if it weren't for the weather, it would be the best crag in the country.
Yeah.
Because the rock is phenomenal. There's great crack climbing. There's great face climbing. The sport bolted faces and rets are world class. It's just that it rains every other day or every third day if you're lucky. And so as a traveling climber, people coming from the west to the east, it drives them insane to deal with that weather at the new. As an eastern climber, you deal with it because, you know, you're born into it and you have a different mindset. You know, you plan your climbing around the weather forecast, whereas in the west, you just plan your climbing around your rest days, and the weather is kind of a secondary issue in most places. And back east, the weather's a major issue you have to work around. And, luckily with the advent of indoor walls and, for the last 10 or 15 years having a home wall, if the weather forecast looks bad, I just stay at home and train on the indoor wall and work on my writing or spend time with my family. And when the weather's good, we travel. And during the summer, we try to escape the East Coast humidity and come west. And so, you know, here we are in Bend.
Here you are in Bend, about as far west as you can get, really. For what would be a more westerly crag? Maybe Mickey's Beach, or like some in north in the USA would. I wonder what that's a good question. I'm not talking bouldering, less routes on the beach.
Yeah, this is pretty far west because
Arcadia or somewhere down near Northern California. I know there's some crags on the beach, literally on the beach. So those are probably some of the most westerly crags you could visit, really.
Yeah, it could be. I mean, Joshua Tree, Southern California, cuts back in. That's actually further east than you guys, I guess.
Interesting.
So, but yeah, I love the west. And, one phenomena of East Coast climbers that we've all observed is that you get to a point that you say, just screw it, I'm moving west, And most of the good climbers at some time or another throw in the towel and move west, whether it's Colorado or California or elsewhere. And
unless you're truly a big city rat.
Yeah.
Because there's definitely a few of those climbers that are just bred for the big city.
But that's not me either. I don't live in the big city. I'm in Lancaster, PA. But, I guess I stay east. I love the climbing, and we have family, and especially now with kids, I place a high premium on family and having raising the kids around their grandparents, and that whole thing is very, very important. But you know what? If I moved west, I lose a lot of the magic in my life is looking forward to those three or four trips a year that I go west.
Right.
That's what I look forward to. I get a week in the valley, or if I go to the southwest for a week, or if I go to Colorado and Wyoming for a couple of weeks, it's magical for me. Because I'm an East Coast climber. But if I lived out here, I think it would be that effect would be kind of lost. So at least that's what I tell myself. So
it's working for now.
It's working for now.
Until you hit 50, right? And that was the magic number.
And again, I don't want to dismiss the fact that there is great climbing in the East. And I always try to twist the arms of my friends in the West to come visit the New River Gorge or visit the Gunks or North Conway, because the climbing is phenomenal. You just got to deal with those rainy days.
I think that's okay. A lot of climbers, they're hardy enough to deal with that. So I tend to like that kind of, it thins out the crowd.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess to get back to one of your questions, I'm not really someone that follows the masses. Yes. As early on as a climber, like when Smith Rock really hit it big in the late 80s, I kind of wanted to come here and see what it was all about. And then Wild Iris around 1990, I wanted to see what that was all about and visit Rifle, same thing. But yet, I kind of have always viewed myself, I kind of pride myself in being my own man in that I march to my own drummer. I'm happy living in Lancaster, Pennsylvania and doing my thing and climbing when I can and contributing to the sport that I love so much in my own way, through my books and through some routes that I put up at various areas. And when I travel, it's really about, learning and being inspired. When I went to Wild Iris the first time or came to Smith Rock the first time and came back east, I came back east as a new person, seeing what Alan Watts was doing here or what Todd Skinner was doing in Lander inspired me. You know, you come back east, you apply that. And that's one reason I, you know, one of the many reasons I encourage climbers to travel is not only does each new area you visit expose you to new skills and new techniques and grow your skill set,
yes.
You know, make you a better climber in that way, but it mentally stretches your boundaries and opens up the doors of what is possible, and it all feeds back and helps you grow as a person. So I think the worst thing a climber can do is just keep climbing at their home area all the time, and you know, you become a big fish in a small pond, but you know, your skills are so specific to that area, you go elsewhere and you're not good, and you don't enjoy climbing when you go to other areas. You need to travel and experience those areas, and that grows you and makes you a more well-rounded climber. And indeed, if you look at the best climbers, the best people in the sport, performance-wise, they're the most traveled people.
Yep. They have a diversity of movement that is hard to match because of that. Well, let's take a little break, and we'll come back in just a second. Eric Hurst is in the house. We're doing Coffee Talk 28 here on Pod Climber. I'm Larry B., again in the Pod Climber studio here in Bend, Oregon. We'll be back in just a second.
Every time you leave me, you pull emotions out like teeth. Oh God, I'm in ecstasy from the pain I'm feeling. Go away and come back, but at least wait till I'm done with this. See, I don't really want to hate you, because you're putting me in hell and ecstasy. Kinda hate it every time you do it when you leave me. I mean, it's not so bad. Are you serious? You, the girl who cried wolf. I don't believe you. Tell me why you're mad.